Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is Power Athlete Radio. With your hosts, Denny Kaye, Professor Booty, and the Luke Summers. And now, toes forward, hips locked, shoulders set, and retract those scapulas. It's time for some knowledge bombs.
Thanks for tuning in to Power Athlete Radio. Long gone are the stereotypes about fighting like a girl, especially when your name is Megan Anderson. The 6-foot-tall female MMA fighter from the Gold Coast of Australia joins us on this week's episode to talk about what it's like to be on the business side of the cage. As Megan explains, she wasn't always the stellar athlete growing up, but as luck would have it, she fell into fighting and boxing after leaving a career in the Army. It's no surprise that she was able to move up in ranks among her female opponents, as she was training almost exclusively with men throughout her development. Megan has a refreshing approach to competition day. No rituals, no superstitions, or even fear for that matter. On game day, she knows that she's put in all the work possible and views the other fighter as merely a sparring partner she's never met. This work ethic and confidence is probably why she's kicking ass in the world of MMA. This is episode 153.
Power Athlete Nation, it's that time again for the premier podcast in strength, conditioning, life lessons. What else are we going to cover today? And fucking ass whoopings.
Today was kind of a sad day. You know, passed away recently.
No.
Prince.
What?
Prince passed away. I just saw him. Yep. I mean, David Bowie, but Prince, we've lost two of prolific artists and musicians ever in the history of the world.
It's a sad day. I thought you were going to say because 420 is over.
Today's National Drug Testing Day, so we got to say.
Dude, in our complex, we have like all sorts of really creepy dudes who yesterday were just moving like a half step slower with half the eye.
they look more molasses over them. They were like fucking like I Am Legend, but just slower.
Yeah, right.
But I saw Prince passed away. That was
R.I.P.
Yeah, I actually saw Prince when I was probably 21 years old at the DNA Lounge in San Francisco. And let me tell you, that little man got up in a full leather jumpsuit with like 8-inch stiletto heels and played and danced his ass off for about 3 hours to the point where I was like, he played right-handed, left-handed, he played the guitar, the drums, he played the keyboards, he sang. It was crazy. At one point, I think he was even playing a triangle. The dude played every instrument and crushed it. Was like, it was kind of like, I'm a Nickelback fan merely because I saw Nickelback and they were pretty good. I was not really a Prince fan, and I saw that and was like, oh, I'm a fucking Prince fan for life. So I was pretty sad.
Well, that's a bummer. R.I.P. Prince. The legend, Hell Show, like his legendary.
I know. We'll have to cut in a little Prince music. Like right at this point, Callie will drop in the Purple Rain for a few bars, and then we'll be on our way.
Well, speaking of being on our way, I want to, I guess, introduce our guest here. Megan Anderson is one of Tyler's fighters. She's a up-and-coming ass-whooper in the female end of UFC. So, Megan, welcome to the show. Welcome to Power Athlete Radio.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Megan's an Aussie. So, Megan, give us, like, the long version, not the short version. It sounds like a pretty kind of pretty action-packed background. You're traveled all the way out here, followed your passion, kind of the riches to rags to back to the riches type deal. So what's going on?
Tell us. Have you ever been to Kansas City?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just asking.
Right. Yeah. Well, okay.
Have you been to Kansas City?
I've driven through Kansas City, spit, had some barbecue. I mean, I know Missouri.
It's the Paris of the Midwest.
Yeah, no, that is Naperville. So Megan, give us your background. What's that story?
Well, I guess like last year, so I signed with Invicta. But what actually happened is I had a fight back home, probably around like May, June last year, and my opponent just didn't turn up. She disappeared. Like, she didn't turn up to the weigh-ins, didn't turn up to the fight. So that was pretty shit. But I managed to get an Invicta contract pretty much that next week. And so I came over here September last year, and I'd been planning to train for 2.5 weeks after my fight. I lost my fight, which was shit. But the following Monday, I was like, I went to Glory, and it was like my first day there, and it's like Monday morning, and I didn't know that Monday morning is wrestling. And I thought I was gonna die. And so like I was still half injured, half like depressed because I just lost. And I'm like struggling through James's Monday morning wrestling class. Like I thought I was going to like lose a limb or something.
Well, let's back it up a little though, Megan. I mean, tell us, you know, so back home, where is back home? What did you do growing up, and how did you find yourself, you know, in a sport that is predominantly male, super brutal, and like, you know, kind of the last thing that most of the girls that I know and I've met would ever find themselves really pursuing would be kind of the MMA deal and getting in there and brawling it out with another girl on the other end of the octagon. So go back even further. Give us kind of a life story.
Well, I'm from a place called the Gold Coast, which is like a 45-minute drive south of Brisbane. So growing up, I was an extremely unathletic child, very injury prone. So I didn't play any sports. I was actually really into music. I used to play musical instruments, and I was kind of artsy like that, but didn't. Ended up going to the army straight after school. Left the army because it was bullshit pretty much, and it was too much politics. And then I guess, like, I have always really been interested in boxing. And I used to always go to boxing fight nights with my friend back home. And I went and picked up tickets from a local, like, MMA gym owner for a MMA show. And he asked me, he's like, oh, do you train MMA? And I was like, no, hell no. And, like, because I used to be one of those people that I seen MMA and I was like, oh, that's so barbaric. It's bad. Like, I used to be one of those people, but I guess as the sport grew and became more popular and I really kind of looked at it a bit more, I started getting interested in it. And, you know, the gym owner said, well, like, come in, have a trial, see if you like it. And I did. And it was kind of like the only sport I've ever played that I kind of picked up relatively quickly.
Well, that's legit. So what was, what was that first, I mean, injury prone, you're a taller girl, kind of lanky, low, you know, lightweight, taller gal. What was that first session like?
It wasn't too bad. Like it was like, I've played, you know, a little bit of like soccer, well, and what we call Aussie rules, which is like AFL. But what I've broken so many bones and I've just like fallen over and all that shit, breaking everything. But that first session was like, it was kind of like, it was a sport that I kind of had to do. Like, I wasn't injury prone at all. I kind of picked it up really quickly. Everyone was super friendly, which was good. Like I managed to pick a gym that was, you know, wasn't really anti-females in the sport, which I think was really good.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Tyler is also online. Tyler, we were kind of talking pre-show about just kind of, I guess, how the dynamic for female coming into the MMA scene and moving into UFC is pretty interesting. So go into that. Give our listeners some backgrounds on that and the perspective there.
Yeah, with females, it's just way different. Number one, I mean, it's you get one or the other. Like Megan had said, you know, some gyms aren't the most female friendly. So you either a lot of times will get these gyms where a female doesn't really get the chance, or they're thrown to the wolves. You know, it's sink or swim, and we'll see if they can last with the guys. So anytime you have a legit female fighter, it means something. Like they've been through it. You know, the female part of the sport doesn't get nearly the respect of the guy, which, you know, fortunately Ronda Rousey really kind of brought the respect to that. But it doesn't get the respect. But what they don't realize is, you know, these girls aren't practicing with other girls, like hardly at all. Like Megan Francis doesn't even really have a female training partner. Her main training partners are, you know, UFC studs, you know, that are men. So it's one of those things that, you know, they have to overcome a whole lot to get to that point. And for Megan, like I said, she's with the promotion Invicta. It's really, it's an all female promotion. So it's, you know, it's filled of the best, you know, some of the best female fighters in the world. And like I mentioned, right now, the biggest weight class for females in the UFC is 135. They recently just made a change. Cyborg, who's, you know, a lot of people believe the greatest fighter in the world. People at one time said she was the only fighter that could ever beat Ronda Rousey. She's getting ready to fight for the UFC at a catch weight of 140. So it'll be the biggest a female's ever weighed and fought for the UFC. So a lot of people are hoping that they're going to bring in 145, which is Megan's weight class. And like I told you before, it's one of those, you know, the day they do it, she'll be right there because she is one of the best 145ers in the world. You know, so it's just the female side of MMA is just, you know, I guess kind of like the female side of most sports in the world, and it doesn't really get the respect it deserves. But
hey Tyler, yeah. How heavy do the girls usually walk? And I mean, I know for the guys it's, you know, you can, you know, cut, I mean, we're up to 8 to 10%, but is it kind of similar for the girls too? Like if she fights at 145, she's walking at like, I don't know, 160.
No. Megan, what are you walking at, like normal, like not even weight count, like approaching 170?
Yeah, 170, maybe a bit over.
So, which is a big cut for a female. You know, a lot of your women aren't cutting a whole lot of weight, but the fact is a lot of your women also aren't 6 foot tall. So, you know, that's the big thing. Most of the girls aren't cutting that much weight, but Megan's 6 foot tall, you know, with a six pack. So where else is she going to go? You know, she is 145 is really the lowest weight class that she can healthily make, you know?
Yeah. So does that become a disadvantage, Tyler?
I think it can and can't. Number one, I think it can be a huge disadvantage if you don't know how to cut, which, you know, isn't going to be an issue.
Why is that? Because you're
because I know a guy.
Are you? Because you. So you read this book this one time by this guy that put it out on the internet. It was like a free ebook that you got to download with.
Yeah, there was this ebook that we read. I pretty much just read it to her. But no, no, it's so we're, you know, we're gonna make sure her cut goes well. She's smart with nutrition. You know, she's one of these that, you know, while she's an Aussie coming to America and learn, I believe, fast that our diets aren't like anyone else's diets. You know, she doesn't eat insensible to begin with. She's always training. So, you know, it's good for her just for the pure fact we're not really changing much. She freaked out a little bit at first at how many carbs I thought she should have. It was more than what she thought she should have. But after a quick description of the roles between being a coach and being the one who's supposed to listen, she agreed. She got it quick. But she like I said, she listens to anything. She trains hard, and she's that strong fighter. I mean, I've grappled with some stuff. She's strong. I mean, it's So it's fine for her. If we can get the weight to come off really good, she's going to be bigger. She's going to be stronger than really anyone she fights. So, I mean, it's great for her, the big weight cut.
Nice. So,
wait, Tyler, are you saying she's stronger than you? Because, I mean,
that is actually not fact.
On Instagram that, you know, that you're not portraying necessarily a image of strength and power.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, she's also not a vegan. she's a meat eater, so she is strong. But is that our one? Can I say that?
Sure. Yeah.
No, she is strong. I mean, she's definitely strong. She hits like a freaking truck. Oh my gosh! So the first time I sparred her, I was gonna spar like a woman. You know, like. When you spar a girl, you're respectful, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you don't go in there with everything you have. And within 30 seconds, I realized if I didn't do that, I was going to get knocked out.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a different mindset. Like, I can always imagine if you got in the ring with a girl, the last thing you would ever do is it's probably like kind of like wrestling with your kids. All of a sudden, if like they buck up a little bit, you got to slam them real fast just to like,
you know? Yeah, no.
So like, you got to probably come in and just like, lead with like a big front kick and follow up with a big right hook, just hoping to knock her out.
So hang on, let's get this story from Megan. So the first time you're sparring with Tyler, what goes on? Did you fucking pop him real good, or what happened?
How many times did I hit you in a five minute
round? I don't know.
It was like 10-1 or something like that.
That's probably a fair estimate.
10-1.
There's a few things in there too.
I got a lot. I got hit a lot.
Well, I mean, just looking at Megan's picture, she looks like she's got a pretty serious reach. I mean, what's your reach?
72 inches.
So it's exactly so. Yeah, she's. A
that's how. Rep. That's exactly how tall Tex is.
Well, theoretically, the way it is like whatever your reach is.
Wingspan.
It's supposed to be your height. Except you run into fighters that are like 5'8 with like a 78-inch wingspan. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that they're a couple generations removed from
Texas. That little Frodo Hobbit.
Well, see, that's the problem. My reach is 76 inches. I have a freakish reach. But you combine my freakish reach with the fact that I'm pathetic, and then you match that with the fact that I don't know how to, like, I have a 76-inch reach, but I want to be 6 inches in front of your face when I fight you.
Well, I was going to say, you lead with your face on every single, like it was the first time when Tyler hit me up. We went on and watched some of his fights on, on the internet. And I was like, man, this guy leads with his face. I mean, it's kind of a devastating technique and strategy just to try to, like, wear somebody out by just giving them multiple face punches. And it seems to be working
for
Tyler. I was like, I like it. It's a straight up, like, pre-Fontaine. It's, you know, it's a suicide pace, and it's a good day to die. I'm just going to leave my face and let you get tired punching me. So it's good.
It worked. Like, yeah, so Megan had heard that. So she literally, 10 seconds into sparring, she stops hitting me. And she looks and goes, oh, my gosh, you really do take a lot of punches. I'm like, yeah, keep going.
I mean, this, like, is true. I was just like, holy shit. Like, I don't know if I'm okay with hitting this person's face, like, this many times in 5 minutes. Like, this is already 10 seconds in. I'm kind of worried for him.
Oh, poor Tyler.
And then would he just go to the body and try to bust up the ribs?
Eventually, I don't know if that was a takedown round, but then when it become takedown rounds, like, I had to, like, get back what little bit of self-respect I had left. Yeah, whatever self-respect you can say for the pure fact. Yeah, so this 35-pound lighter-than-me chick beat me up on the feet, so now I'm going to use my 35 pounds and take her down. I mean, I guess that's
Megan. Would you say you're definitely you come from a boxing background? Is what it sounds like, and it seems like striking and that boxing kind of has really been your allowed you to be pretty competitive. And I would imagine going out and working with James and these guys that now all of a sudden the ground game's kind of coming up with it. Would you say you definitely kind of lean on the standing on your feet and kind of striking and just kind of be more of a surgical boxer?
Well, like, the funny thing is, though, like, prior to, like, training MMA, I haven't really trained any martial arts. So, like, it's just kind of came organically. I think, the stand-up side is just something that I've been able to pick up a lot easier, and I've kind of taken to, and particularly with James, like, he's improved that so much. But I'm definitely, you know, it's definitely something that I rely on, but I'm really focusing on my wrestling and my ground game at the moment, because that is where I'm not as strong, but, you know, it's getting there and I'm improving all the time. And, you know, James and everyone at Glory helps out with that, so it's good.
There's kind of two schools of thought. You know, I come from a boxing background, and, you know, like, when I watch MMA, there's kind of this two schools of thought where it's like, you bring in, most guys are either come from a wrestling background, they got to teach them the stand-up game, or you bring in the people that are boxers and then just teach them enough ground game so that they can defend themselves, or at least, you know, come out there and do pretty well, or like a Ronda Rousey, who's obviously a judo player.
Yeah.
Me personally, I think the most dangerous people are the boxers and the people that can fight from their feet and just be so surgical with it. And you watch that too in the UFC. If you bring in a guy who's a, you know, real, real skilled boxer, and he knows just enough wrestling and just enough kind of groundwork, you know, not get murdered. It's, you know, to me at least, those are the guys that always just kind of, you know, just devastate people and just really, you know, it's when you see the blood really going.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Like, one that comes to mind is Cody Garbrandt. He has like a very, very big boxing background, and like the stuff he's done at Alpha Male has given him the, you know, wrestling and ground game that's enough, but, you know, his stand up is very good, and not a lot of people can deal with that. So, like, that's one person that I'm kind of interested to see how his career progresses, you know, because he is a very much a stand up fighter.
So, with your background, I mean, not a lot, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of athletic background, but I feel like in terms of being in the ring, and like, you have to tap into like this inner competitive beast, or, and you got to kind of get the hate, you know, like what Matt Vincent would say, like, you got to find the hate. Were you a scrapper as a gal back in the Gold Coast, or was this like somebody
you army? I mean, yeah. You know, like, I mean, like, I was kind of thinking about you, like, oh, I wasn't necessarily athletic, I got hurt. But then I decided to go in the Army, and I kind of scratched my head a little bit. I'm like, if I was a kid that was prone to getting hurt and hadn't been really athletic, I don't know if fucking G.I. Joe, let's go, you know, would be the way I'd sign up. But it's kind of an interesting kind of turn of events that you kind of flourish. I mean, was it just the fact that you were real tall and just kind of a little unathletic, or just uncoordinated early on, and then as you grew up and you got older, you're just kind of a late bloomer a little bit?
I feel like I'm still kind of – unathletic, but I just make it work for me. My dad used to be in the Army, so that was one of the reasons why I went in. I am like, it's a different fitness. Like, it's more endurance, like being able to carry shitload of weight over long distances than be able to do short, like, bursts of fire and movement, and then be able to, you know, pack up all your shit again and walk, you know, well, miles, I guess, kilometers we call it in Australia. But yeah, like, I don't know, it's just, I guess I've just kind of grown into my uncoordinatedness, if you could call it that.
So what about the mental side of things? I mean, have you always been kind of a competitor, troublemaker, scrapper, problems with authority, or is it just something that you found through getting in the quote, the octagon or the rink or whatever, and seeing that person you have to compete against and just wanting it more than them?
Well, I was never a scrapper, thank God. I tend to think that I have a little bit of standards. No one, like, I've never got into like a fight at a bar or a nightclub or a pub or something like that. Like, no one had ever tried. I think, you know, being 6 foot tall kind of puts a lot of people, particularly girls, off. And but like, the mental side, I've always been a pretty tough person. Like, I've always been kind of mentally strong. I fight, like, training here has been the hardest that I've ever had to kind of face, just for the fact that I'm a super competitive person, but I am training with the top level athletes in the sport, and like, I never win a round. Like, I'm constantly getting my ass handed to me by James and Zach and Tim and all those guys, and I just have to just push through. And I feel like that sacrifice of coming over here, moving away from my family, like having to deal with all that, makes me a stronger person, because none of my opponents will ever do that. Like, they won't ever sacrifice what I've sacrificed. They won't ever go through, so they don't want it as much as I want it. So that's why I feel like when I get in the cage, I don't really hate my opponent, but it's more like I look at it as it's like I'm just going to work. It's like I'm a surgeon and I'm going to clinically
dismantle you.
Well, this person, yeah.
Well, the idea, at least for me, was I never wanted the test to be as hard as the preparation. So I knew that if I, you know, trained my ass off and suffered in, like, the, you know, the lead up to, you know, game day or the match or the fight, that as long as I, you know, I always wanted to never be surprised or have a situation where the fight or the, you know, the test was harder than the preparation, which, you know, thank God. You know, and I think what scares a lot of people is they don't really take that attitude of, like, hey, I'm going to suffer all this so that like, this becomes the fun part. And then they get in there and they get in situations that they don't want to be in.
Yeah, don't know if they're ready. You know,
yeah, that's where that self-doubt. And I remember, you know, I played in the NFL, and I remember playing with guys that didn't do the preparation. And, like, you could see them legitimately nervous. And they were like, you know, are you nervous? I'm like, well, no.
Anxious, right?
Yeah, I'm ready to go out there and fucking bust somebody's ass because I did all the work. Now, if you lied and didn't do what you said you did, then I would be fucking nervous for you too, and you probably shouldn't go out there. And then, you know, that's when, you know, people's worst nightmares happen, or they get into a situation. I mean, you, and I'm sure you guys have seen this in fighters, like, you know, most recently in the Ronda Rousey fight, where, you know, she hadn't put in the preparation that she needed to, you know, whether or not she was doing Hollywood, had all these other distractions, but she kind of went in there and just kind of, like, looked a little timid, like, you know, should I be here? You know, all these kind of little bits of missed out. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, when you have a little bit of doubt, your worst fears fucking become reality really quickly. And that just happens so often with guys in the fight game. I mean, it happens in football, happens in every sport. And it only takes just one opportunity to be exposed. I mean, Luke and I this morning were talking about it, said if a year ago you had asked me that Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey would not be involved in the UFC or the fight game into this time, you know, we went back last year, I would have fucking bet you every dollar I have that wouldn't have been the case. And to see him retire and her not even anywhere on the picture is unfucking believable. UFC 200.
I know, it's crazy.
You know, so I mean, and she was, dude, I mean, Ronda was the top person in the UFC. I mean, did so much for, you know, women fighters and acceptance and this. I mean, dude, she was so hot. And then to go out like that. And then the amazing thing we talk about is how many people were like, fuck her. And I'm like, wait a minute, you guys just were fucking loving her. Like, how all of a sudden
did trolls, dude, just
get it. I know. Fuck these people.
Not you people listening.
You guys are fucking cool.
But it's so easy from the comfort of your home or behind a, you know, fucking mobile device to just shit on somebody's fucking existence because, you know, either you feel insecure or you think it's funny or whatever. It's just, to me, like, it fucking, like, thank God I never read any of the internet, never message boards. I never even got on the internet other than book travel when I played in the NFL because I could not fucking stand the armchair quarterbacks on Monday. You know, the dude that had 47 hot dogs and 95 beers that are like, fuck these guys.
Yeah, Tyler, like, after that, the Conor McGregor fight, I think, Tyler, maybe we were texting and maybe it was on our scrum call where you're like, dude, I'm dreading armchair fucking fighters. He tapped out like a pussy, and it's just like, fuck.
Well, dude, so I'll tell you, everything they would have done, you know.
The other one, and people don't realize this, is that, like, McGregor was fighting in, like, the 140s, comes up to 170, and the other dude's, like, a 200-plus coming down to 170, and and, like, McGregor was probably, what, like, 176 on fight night?
No, maybe.
205, 210. I mean, like, I remember when they squared off, I was like, Jesus, that dude is way fucking bigger. And then he comes out and hits a dude with some solid shots. And the dude didn't even fucking flinch. And he even said as he was walking out, he's like, I guess the bigger man can take more blows. That was my, I mean.
Yeah, but take harder blows.
I mean, yeah. And, you know, and then the fact that Diaz fucking accused him of playing touch butt in the park with Ido Portal. Oh, my God. That was the funniest shit I've ever seen. What do you guys think of that? I mean, you know, we were texting offline about it, that this is totally a ploy to try to get more money out of Dana White in the UFC.
Yeah. That was kind of my thing. I figured, like, yeah, yeah, he's just trying to get more money. Then, of course, then you get all the people saying, you know, that selfish guy, like, how much more money does he need? I'm like, however much he wants. Like, who cares? Which I always hate that. People calling a fighter selfish because they want more money. Screw you, man. Like, this sport hurts. Get paid as much as you can.
Well, and the UFC, I mean, off of those pay-per-views, they're making, like, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes.
Like, kicking those guys' chicken scraps. And, like, dude, yeah. McGregor was the first guy to ever really get a seven-figure kind of payout.
So, like, I mean, a huge one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's looking at it like, wait a minute, I'm the biggest draw on this. I mean, and he's seeing what, like, Floyd Mayweather, who's making, like, $100 million off
yeah.
the fight. And he's yeah. like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and just a little bit ago, he just released a statement. I don't know if you got to see it, Megan, or you guys. Which made me like him even more. So he just released a statement saying that he's not retiring. He's actually ready for 200. But what it sounds like is the UFC saying, hey, like, you know, you can't fight because you didn't do this. And he's saying, well, screw you, then I'm retiring. But I'm still training as if I'm fighting, if you all can overlook all that. So pretty much what he came out and said was, you know, this media stuff didn't get me into this. I got into this by training my butt off. I didn't get into this by handing out flyers. I get paid to fight. I don't get paid to promote. And he said that he finally realized that, and that's what cost him his last win. So he pretty much packed up his team, sent him to, like, Iceland or something. And, yeah. like, I mean, I think he said, yeah, taking his team to Iceland, and he's training, like, old Rocky IV style, screw the cameras. I don't want to do interviews. I don't want to do your press conferences. You know, I made you all this money.
He said he's happy to do the big ones, just not like he did for Aldo, was go on like a 200-day like mini world tour. Like, he wants to go there, do like the day that he has to, then fly back. But apparently it sounds like the UFC want him to do a lot more than that, and he doesn't want to because he wants to focus on his training.
You know what, I'm all for that. I mean,
yeah.
you know, like, if you look at the NFL, I mean, they give, like, the media 1 hour on the game day leading up to the week, like, starting, like, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday with, like, you know, a few select players. And then after the game is all you really have to do. And, like, you know, it's, like, the idea that, hey, man, you know. And but, you know, the other problem, too, with the UFC and mainly the fight game, you guys know this, is there's no union involved. There's nobody, you know, really looking out for you guys.
Yeah, protecting the fighters' yeah, best interest.
There's nothing. I mean, and it's – and they haven't – always tried to come in and wanting to create some union. And, dude, the minute that gets talked, you know what they do? They fucking blackball that guy and basically burn him out. But until the players really come together and, you know, or the fighters come together and actually, you know, have a little bit of union, so at least you have somebody, you know, bargaining with, you know, the UFC for not only revenue and you know, fighter safety and this. I mean, but, you know, I mean, it's kind of like all of a sudden Reebok comes in, signs a deal, and they force you guys to wear it. And that was a huge moneymaker for a lot of the athletes, being like, yeah. I got paid a shitload of money to have all this sponsorship on me. And they just took that away and were like, yeah, I mean, normally what would happen, collective bargaining or having a union would come in and be like, that's fine, we'll happily do this, but you guys are going to pay everybody a royalty based off of the merchandise sold, which happens in every professional sport. So, you know, but it's at a situation where dudes are just so hungry to get out there and get exposure, they're willing to, like, you know, forego a lot of the formalities. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but hey, man, in my opinion, I hope every professional athlete can get every fucking dollar available to them and then some, because I remember when there was a lawsuit with the NFL and the Raiders, Al Davis had to actually release the corporate earnings of the Raiders as part of the litigation package. It was the first time that anybody ever got to see the books of an NFL team. And it was like, mother of God, these dudes were making money off of every hot dog sold, off of concessions, the parking, the luxury boxes. And then they were putting it all into a pot and having, I mean, Sharon, dude, these dudes were making like the most disgusting money. And the best, it came out that none of the teams were even paying the players. All of the money for the salary cap was coming from the TV deal. So they had negotiated for somebody else to pay our salaries. I mean, and then the money they saved, they're put in their pockets. I mean, dude, it was unbelievable. So, you know, the deal is, I hope he gets every fucking dollar. And, you know, it sucks that those guys really, you know, basically kind of manipulate and really just intimidate guys into taking, you know, some bullshit and going out there and just fighting for, you know, for blood. So,
yeah, and that's kind of it. He's the first one, I feel, and that's, you know, I'm a huge Conor McGregor fan. He's the first one to reach that level. Usually when a guy reaches that level, take GSP, you know, several years ago, for instance. when they reach that level, they're just – they're buddy-buddy with the UFC. And everybody's been saying this entire time about Conor McGregor, is that he makes the decisions. You know, he's Dana's boyfriend, just, like, goofing around and all this. And I love it because here's your biggest guy in the sport right now, your most popular, your biggest moneymaker, the one guy who everybody says will do anything to make Dana happy and vice versa, says, hey, you know, I'm not getting treated fair. You don't care about me. Screw you. I don't care. Like, that's awesome. That's a huge step in the right direction, in my opinion, for the sport in general. I hope he gets a lot more fans out of this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what we would hope. But oddly enough, fans usually side with the institution, which blows my fucking mind. It's kind of like similar. I got into contract disputes because I had promised a new deal. And then when I went to negotiate the new deal, they basically told me to go fuck myself. And then we got into contract disputes and I got traded. And, like, dude, I was like, I'm not asking for anything other than what I was promised. And you know, people that are like, oh, you know, the first guy to ask you for your autograph is also the first guy to be like, fuck you, the team is everything. And so what you run into is that people are UFC fans, and they're a fan of whoever's out there that the UFC puts out there and whoever they put their media force behind. And it's like, even though, you know, we're probably similar to each other in that I'm a fan of players. I'm not a fan of the NFL, and I'm not a fan of the teams. People always ask me, like, who's your team? I'm like, I don't have a team. I root for individual players that I know and players that are good, and I want to have more time actually supporting teams. And, you know, same thing with the UFC. Like, I won't watch the UFC if there's not a fighter on there that I actually follow and like. And I was actually really excited to watch UFC 200 to see McGregor fight Nate Diaz. I mean, dude, I couldn't wait to see that fight. I mean, just because I'm a Conor McGregor fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, man. The sport's got a long way to go. And, again, I think it's a step in the right direction if people, you know, if people are smart about it. But it's – you know, it's still, man, it's such a baby sport. Even though, you know, as I said, it's the first sport ever. You know, people will say running was the first sport ever. That's, you know, running was the – that's not true. Fighting is the first sport ever known to man.
Well, running is the sport but of it's, coward.
That's what I'll say. Running, yeah, running's what happened when someone didn't want to play anymore.
Running is the sport of the coward. So just, that's why, you know, I mean, and, you know, for those of you guys around, it's, no disrespect, but – it's a sport of the coward. It's the guy who runs away. And Andy Stumpf is the one that coined that to me. He coined that to Brian McKenzie. He told him, you practice the sport of the coward.
See, here's where there's a – that falls out. Because if guy, like, wants to start shit with me and he's fucking 50 feet away, I'm running into that fight. So technically the running
– Sprinting is the
– sprinting is different.
Yogging, as it's known in, you know, Europe, is the sport of the coward.
Okay. Yeah. Agree to disagree.
Yeah. Megan, I got a question in terms of training outside of the ring and outside of the mat. Do you bang weights? Do you sprint? Do you run? Like, what, you know, mobility, you know, flexibility, conditioning? Like, what does your day look like in terms of, or is it just purely just learning the fight game?
I do strength and conditioning outside of the gym. And like I run, but I only run when I'm in fight camp to help drop the weight. So I only run for like half an hour, 40 minutes. That's about it. Just like a slow, steady pace, just to get sweating and drop the weight. So other than that, I hate running. Yeah, I struggle to do. I do the half an hour when I have to. So. Like, I avoid running at all costs if I can.
Did you start lifting weights in the Army, or is it something that you picked up recently?
Not when I was in the Army, but when I left, I was doing more, like, weightlifting, kind of, like, bodybuilding-type weightlifting before I got into MMA. So I guess that's where I got a bit of my strength from, but, like, I've always been a pretty strong person, so... like, just it's just kind of built on that. Like, after every fight, I change different things and I work on different things, so I'm just getting stronger and faster and improving in all areas, which is, you know, good. Because if you know, I'm the type of fighter, if you don't improve from fight to fight, then you know, I don't think you really need to check your training and
like what you're doing, because like you're not going to go anywhere.
So, I mean, from what I understand, you're all in. You made the move from Australia, came over to the Midwest. You're training with James. This is your full-time gig, right?
Yeah, it is.
So give us like a day in the life of, or a week in the life of, you know, let's just say training camp. Like what does your day look like?
Training camp. Okay. Well, like Mondays I train morning and night, and then I'll run for half an hour after training. Tuesday I do strength and conditioning in the morning, then I'll train at night. Wednesday train morning and night, and I'll run after training. Thursday strength and conditioning in the morning, training at night. Friday we train in the mornings, and then Saturday is our like main sparring day, so we do 10 5-minute rounds, so 5 with little gloves, 5 with big gloves.
And then do you have to go to a local pub and pour drinks or anything to make up for it, or is it everything 100% it's all about just being the best fighter that you can be?
No, everything, like I don't have another job. I'll do some babysitting every now and then for, you know, the guys at the gym that have kids, and if they want some, they've got stuff to do and they want a babysitter, but this is pretty much it. Like I live off my fight money. So it's all or nothing kind of thing for me, I guess.
That's motivation, man.
I love it. No plan B. I always appreciate, you know, whenever I meet athletes and we start talking about, you know, like what's the plan, and I'm always get a little nervous when I hear, oh, well, you know, if this doesn't work out, I like people that are like, no, man.
You can sell cars. And
yeah, no, it's like, hey, if this doesn't work out, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I'm sure I'll figure it out, but, you know, there is no plan B. And I think, you know, that attitude is, you know, realistically the, you know, most important thing, especially for athletes that are, you know, in the position of like, hey, I'm up and coming. Like, this is something that I'm looking to do. And, you know, like, yeah, it's fucking great. I mean, you're at the time of your life when you want to do it. And seems to be that, you know, with the UFC growing, and especially with like the acceptance and the kind of the audience for female athletes really growing. I mean, I think if we went back 3 or 4 years ago, people would be like, girls can't fight.
Yeah, obviously.
But like, you know, recently, I mean, just some of the fights that have really, you know, the female fights that have happened have been really entertaining and really good. I mean,
it's kind of like the CrossFit, man. Honestly, I like when we go to the games or to the regionals or local throwdowns, you know, I think that females are just much more elegant movers and competitors. And I see the kind of the same thing come through. I do enjoy watching the female fights on any of those big cards.
Well, that, and also for me personally, I would like with boxing especially, I always like watching the flyweights and the lighter guys fight, mm-hmm. just because it's so much action. Like you watch, I mean, there's a reason heavyweight boxing is in the world right now, because one, there's no great big heavyweights, but two, they're like 5 punches. You know, and they fucking go down, and people want to like see punches. They want to see an exciting fight. They want to see it go the distance. You know, you're paying big money for a seat. You want to sit in there for a full, you know, deal. They don't want first or second round knockouts. So I think, you know, especially with the UFC, there's been really, if you look at like the amount of fights, you're usually, you know, the biggest is 205. I mean, you don't really even see very big, you know, super or the heavyweights can fight anymore. I mean, Tyler, I could be wrong, but like for the most part, most of the fights are in those lighter weight classes.
Have you ever heard someone claim that a steak was too good or that a chick was too hot? How about that an athlete was too fast? No, you haven't. Why? Because that would make no fucking sense at all. You know the slogan, speed is king and speed kills, but the value of being fast on the field is not limited to that of a catchy tagline. It is legitimately the defining characteristic of the better athlete when all else is considered equal. In fact, you can even mitigate your deficits in size, strength, and power by simply outrunning your opponent. This is why we've created the Power Athlete Speed Program, complete with instructional videos, points of performance, integrated speed tests, and progress tracking, thanks to Train Heroic. The fixed 8-week program is dedicated to increasing speed. Dial in your mechanics, increase efficiency, and seize the opportunity to optimize speed under duress. This is the best way to prepare yourself or your athletes to outrun the competition. Speed can be developed, expanded, and improved upon. No one athlete is truly fast or truly slow. Instead, they're either actively training for speed or they're riding the bench. Learn more about the new Power Athlete Speed Program at www.powerathletehq.com. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, those are where you're stopping. Heck, you, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, they're little people. You know, there's not to say there's no studs at the heavyweight classes, but it's just not.
Yeah,
you know, it's good. Not the more popular. You know,
I mean, yeah, people want to watch like the Clay Guidas of the world that like just fucking run around in circles, going
absolutely
crazy. You know, like my favorite is the fight's over and that dude's still doing circles in the rings.
Right? Yeah,
like people want to watch that type of energy. They don't want to watch like. You know, kind of the big slow dudes getting out there. And just
guys like me who could like lumber through for 7 seconds and then have to call timeout.
or the dudes that like, as soon as they get hit once, just like, tackle the legs and just lay on them. And you're like, dude, oh, yeah, come on, move, do something.
Yeah. I'm the armchair like fight coach who's like, just stall. Don't get punched. Like tap out. I'm such a pussy when it comes to that stuff. Like, you know, I haven't been in a ton of fights, and even the ones that I do, if I've connected, like, I feel bad for the other guy. I'm like, what? I just fucking
did
that.
I'm
fucker deserved it.
I'm the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. I like, somebody asked me about one of my most memorable fight experiences, and it was actually like when I was pretty young. And I've told these guys have heard the story, but I got in the ring with a guy that was older than me, about the same weight, same size, and he fucking hit me pretty hard with a. Straight left and like, I mean, not even a jab. You just stepped right in, and he like, you know, cracked open my face. And my trainer, our coach, fucking jumped on me with like a quarter and basically pressed the quarter on because he saw how deep it went to try to keep it from gushing. And the funny part was, I got hit and I was totally calm. And like, he was like, "Are you all right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." And the other dude was pretty pissed off because I had hit him. And I remember after, he's like, "You will be a good fighter." That guy is not a good fighter. I said, "Why?" He's like, "You actually got hit and got more calm." He gets hit and he gets more pissed off. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "To, you know, and that type, you know, eats energy." And it's just, you know, something you learn and you know,
kind of some emotions.
Yeah, just manage the emotion because you watch guys that, you know, get so emotional into shit and it just eats them and just kills them. So, I mean, the ability to stay calm, especially after you got hit, which is prerequisite, and so few people do it. But you watch really good fighters, and they just, you know, even though they get hit, they still just keep moving forward and being real methodical. So I just wondered, like, not coming from a boxing background, what was that first feeling or first emotion the first time you got really hit? And I'm talking about, like, the hit where, like, you feel at the end of your fingertips and in the fucking fillings of your teeth.
Yeah, my teeth hurt.
My very first fight, I think – was when I kind of, like, I didn't, like, she hit me hard. Like, I've been hit harder in fights. But that was the first fight that kind of, I was just like, holy shit. Like, I'm in a fight. So, like, we went the distance. And, like, I remember going into that third round. And I was just like, how the fuck am I going to hold my arms up? I had no idea, like, what I was going to do, but that was the fight that, like, I'd be hit, like, you know, my nose is bleeding. Like, I pretty much put everything into that fight. She put everything into the fight. And that's kind of like the first feeling of just like, okay, like I'm in a fight now. Like, this is what it's like. This is what, you know, the emotions, like the getting tired, the pushing through that, not wanting to quit. Like all those things, like, you know, that was really, really big moment for me. So
now do your family and friends, I guess, pre-fighting friends, how do they regard your career choice here? Are they, you know, at first I'm sure it was like, oh, you know, Megan, are you sure you want to do this? But are they like in your corner now? Are they watching, or do they fly over and watch a fight?
They don't fly over, but they, like, they watched, like, my mom, when I first told her, she was like, oh, no, Megan, really? She was like, I don't want you to break your perfectly straight nose. I'm like, really? That's all you care about? She still, to this day, is, like, is adamant about, she's like, okay, like, you've got to fight, and I'm excited about it. Just don't get your nose broken, please.
Yeah, don't get hit in the face. Okay, thanks, Mom.
I was going to say, good thing you don't have Tyler as your coach, because And you're basically looking like Megan, hamburger.
He's get
like,
your face out there.
He's like, okay, the first thing I want you to do is I want you to round your shoulders, and I want you to push your head out and your neck like you're a turtle out of a shell. And then when that punch comes, don't move.
Headbutt it.
Yeah. So like
a gladiator.
And then, yeah. And then after that happens about 50 times, then their arms might be getting tired, at which point that's when you strike.
You strike.
All right, listen. So fans love blood, right? How many, like when I see that a fight is boring, I bleed. It's just what I do.
It's part of the showman. It's like WCW or WWE. Yeah.
Are you not entertained?
Yes, and then I win. Like I have had I've had a total of 76 stitches in my face. And out of all of those, I won. They were wins. I just got my tooth fit. The final thing done with my tooth to get my tooth repaired 2 days ago. So I'm finally on the up and up, you know.
Dude, just kind of an interesting segment into this, but so my daughters, I have two little girls, two twins that are 4 and a half, and I take them to gymnastics, and then they go to dance, and dance is next door to the Mendez brothers' art of jiu-jitsu place, and so where we park, we walk by, and my daughters both unanimously decided that they didn't want to wear the dance outfits anymore, that they wanted to do jiu-jitsu. So, like, we've gone by and watched a couple times, and I've taken them in there, and, like, I keep being like, you sure you guys want to do this? And then, like, they'll be like, yes, we want. And so they asked yesterday when we're starting. So I hit up Tate Fletcher, because I also know 10th Planet as a place over here in Costa Mesa. So we were watching some of the jiu-jitsu stuff and some of the, like, the judo and, like, Ronda Rousey stuff last night. And, like, you could see the look of concern on their face. And I'm like, what's the problem? And they're like, will we get in trouble if we do this? And I told my daughter, I was like, well, you'll get in trouble if you do this at school. But if we go there and you're in the uniform and not white, like, you won't get in trouble. And like, I could see them both like nodding their heads. I'm like,
we get together.
Well, like, and they both kind of like nodded their heads, and they were like, we want to do jiu-jitsu. And I was like, okay. And so I've been, I got to take them over there and watch and like go meet the guy a little bit. But I have visions of my 4 and a half, old daughters training for, let's say, 10 years in jiu-jitsu and being, like, pretty good at it. And then they're, like, 14 or 15 and go to high school and some dude, like, you know, fucking says something. And they're like, let's fucking rat pack him, you know? Like, they're like, hey, I got a pretty good fighter, too, you know? So, I believe me, as a father, the thought of having a daughter that is
combat ready.
It's not only combat ready, but confident and secure enough to be in a situation and feel that she's not helpless is – probably, you know, I know a lot of parents would disagree with me, but for me personally, that will be a huge, huge fucking weight off my shoulders to, like, watch them go out the door together and know that, like, not only did they have backup, but they also are fairly skilled in, you know, in some shit. So if something goes down that, you know, and I'll have to give them the same talk my mom gave me, which is, I'll never be mad at you, you fight, but if you lose, you can't come home. So that's what my mom told me when I was 14 years old, which actually fared really well for the next 20 years of my life playing in the NFL, because then I looked at, like, every fight I got into that I had to win or I couldn't go home. But
it's kind of like that scene from Face Off where I think it's John Travolta gives his daughter that butterfly knife.
Yeah, and like, put it on his fucking juggler and fucking slice him.
But twist the blade.
Like that's a, you know, that's a fucking real deal. I mean, and, you know, in a world, and, you know, we've been to Australia and met a lot of Aussie girls that are not only pretty aggressive in their language, but also having to deal with Aussie guys are usually pretty tough chicks. So, mm-hmm. You know, hey, fuck being a victim, especially in women in these days. So
yeah, totally.
I'm always stoked on anything that's in terms of empowering women and like a positive role model that I can show my daughter that just isn't some girl, you know, hawking fucking protein powder naked on Instagram, you know.
Oh, that annoys the shit out of me. I hate those girls.
Yeah, well, you know, and here's, like, I understand it's modeling and they're trying to sell products. As long as they don't attach the word athlete like anywhere to it, if you're like, hey, I'm just a model, I pay this photographer a whole bunch of money to take these really nice pictures of me and, you know, looking like this, then, like, I'm totally cool with that. The problem is when they're like, oh, really good working out with these athletes today. And I'm like, fuck you. Athletic, to be an athlete involves doing something athletic or eating in a sport. going to the gym and talking about how you're going to, you know, you're a warrior and you crushed it and, like, you know, you're going to battle with the fucking weights to me is
well, it's because you're not a warrior.
No, I'm not. but it's like, you know, like, no, like yeah, yeah. It's like I realize that it's marketing and the goal is to separate people from the money in their wallets. So, like, this is the image they're portraying. But for me as a dad, I look at it and I'm like, fuck. I failed as a father if my daughters, the only way they make money is hawking protein powder, fucking naked on social media. So, like, and that's why I'm always stoked in terms of, like, you know, with, you know, even Ronda Rousey coming out and being, you know, not only a good looking girl, but, like, you know, having this, you know, pretty, you know, amazing judo background and being a fucking judo player and then getting into the UFC and being a big star, to me is, you know, that's the type of stuff I want to, you know, hopefully see, have my daughter see, or people that are, you know, athletes are competitive and be able to go out and use their, you know, fitness and training for something more so than just fucking 100,000 likes on Instagram, which realistically the only like they really want is their fathers who aren't commenting or liking it either. So,
dang. Well, here's the, sheesh.
Sorry.
Here's the thing. No, here's the thing. I made this comment to a friend not too long ago. In America, it's good and bad. We're kind of in this weird spot where the men are getting weaker, like socially, mentally, physically, everything. The men are getting weaker, but I feel like women as a whole are getting stronger. You're really starting to see that. I mean, it's whether it's the MMA movement, the CrossFit movement, you know, just sports in general, you're just starting to see, you know, the men are just, you know, and it's not a crack at sensitive guys or whatever. It's not that doesn't mean anything, but it's just like the standards for being a male, for being a man are changing. They're getting watered down. It's like, well, you know, you can do this. It's fine. But women, like, their standards used to be like that, and they're getting more free. Like, oh, you can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You know, it's now we're teaching men, like, oh, no, you don't have to, you don't need to be strong if you don't want to. You don't need to do this. You don't need to be a gentleman. If you don't want to be a gentleman, who cares? You know, like, you do you. But we're teaching our daughters, like, hey, you be anything you want to be. You know, so we're kind of at this intersection where, you know, it's really good for the women's movement, but, you know, it's really bad for the strong women that are out there looking for strong guys.
Well, like, Tyler, that's kind of an interesting deal because I mean, fuck, I'll go back 20 years and I know, like, it seems like a fucking blink in my eye, but as a young freshman in college, I sat in a class taught by a guy named Pedro Nogueira, who told me as a white male that I was responsible for all of the wrong of the world and oppressed and, you know, listened to all this stuff. So I think there's this feeling that, you know, that so much of the wrong in the world has been, you know, caused by men, that there's almost this kind of backlash in the way for westernized men that, you know, they have to almost become more accepting or, you know, more. And I actually, you know, welcome it because it's kind of like vegans. I welcome the vegan because we don't compete for the same food source. He's not going to eat. I mean, I'm fine to eat his plants and vegetables, but he's not going to eat my meat. Same thing for men. I mean, I realize that if men want to go in this direction, then you know what? It just you know, becomes, I guess, better for us. And, you know, it's my responsibility to raise my son in a way of being like, first of all, don't do that. That's, you know, but I mean, that's part of the problem. It's almost this, you know, weird deal. I mean, I saw it years ago when we did a seminar in Sweden. We were like right in the downtown in this area called Stuttgart, and all the guys, I thought that they were, you know, I mean, you know, alternate lifestyle. I mean, you know, they were, you know, capri pants, pink shirts, sweaters over the shoulders. And I was like, these are some really small little pretty men. I was like, wow, they probably are, you know, obviously, you know, gay and alternate lifestyle. And then I saw them with these smoking hot girls and I was super, super confused. And I remember talking to one of the girls and she's like, oh, the more well together and more manicured a man is, the more wealthy he is. And that was really weird for me. And then I went into the bathrooms and never found a urinal. And I asked about that one and they were like, well, it's impolite to stand to pee. So
I'm a big share the urinal type guy. Like if someone's peeing, I'm just going to jump in theirs.
And after that, I just start peeing in the sink. You know, like that's like it just that was one of the deals, and I just think that you're gonna have a, you know, as we become, you know, more, I guess, you know, technologically advanced and people are required to do less and less, I think that you're going to see a kind of division between, you know, people like that are, you know, want to go bang weights or, you know, train and fight and, you know, cut their own wood and actually live a fairly more, I guess, you know,
fulfilling
lifestyle.
In our opinion,
more so than being like, so Friday's my facial day and I got to get a manicure and a pedicure and then I got to get my car vacuumed. I mean, fuck, dude. Like, wash your own car, change your own oil.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my fucking soapbox for today.
Megan, let me ask you this, because you're pretty fresh in the fight game, right? You know, unassuming upbringing, like there was no like, man, I always just wanted to beat wholesale ass. What if there's a young lady listening to this, which is doubtful because we have like two girls that listen. But what if, what advice would you give if they're like, man, I really want to try that combat stuff, but I don't want to be a tomboy. You know, I don't want to get hit in the face. I mean, what barriers did you see? What barriers did you overcome? And, you know, talk about how fulfilling it is to be a part of something like this.
I'd say, who cares what people think? Like, you know, when I first started, there was a lot of people who were just like, oh, why are you doing that? You're stupid. I was like, well, I don't really give a fuck what you think. I'm going to do what I want. Like, and I'm a super competitive person. So I'm like, if the guys can do it, I can do it. I'm not necessarily like I'm not one of those feminists because I think they're ridiculous. I think like everyone should just do whatever they want to do. And like, it's for a female, it's going to be a bit harder because yeah, it's physically and I feel mentally it's more demanding, but it's worth it and you get so much fulfillment out of it. But also, like, I would also recommend like research the gyms that you want to go to, because I feel like if you find a good gym, it makes such a difference. Like, I know of gyms where they treat the girls pretty badly and they pretty much just throw them in and beat the shit out of them. But then I also have been to gyms that they help them and they want to let them grow and they make them into a better fighter, or, you know, help them with whatever goal that they want to do. So that's one thing, particularly for a female, is I feel like the gym that you go to can definitely make or break your love for the sport.
Now I want to get into a little bit more on some of the fight that you have coming up. I mean, you got one May 7th, your opponent, Amanda Bell.
Yes.
Tell us about her. Like, what's the 411? What's the lowdown? Like give me the scoop. She, you know, what's her background? How does she fight? You know, like, what's, previous wins, previous losses? I mean, you're obviously watching film and, you know, doing your homework on your fighter. So just looking for some information about her.
Yeah, I've watched a little bit of stuff on her. I think she considers herself a striker. But I don't think her striking is very good. She doesn't really have much of a wrestling or ground game. She's super short, so there's going to be a massive height and reach advantage. Her last fight was, I think, April last year, and she lost that fight via submission. She's been pretty inconsistent with winning and losses. So she had a pretty – what I've seen is she's had a pretty successful amateur career, but as a pro, it's been very up and down. I find she fights very emotional, which is going to be bad for her. And I just don't see anywhere that I need to worry about, like – She's got nothing that I haven't seen before, and I just don't think it's going to end well for her.
Nice. That's like a very polite way of saying,
where,
get the fuck out of the way.
Where does she fight out? Where does she fight out of, and who's she training with?
I have no idea. I don't really pay much attention to that stuff. It doesn't really bother me. Like, she could train with, you know, the top fighter in the world, that means nothing on the night. They can't help them in that cage.
So what is your fight day? I mean, do you have a ritual routine that you've kind of built up? Like, how do you get your mind right for this type of thing?
I don't really have a ritual. Like, I eat breakfast.
What about a playlist? I mean, are you putting on?
Are you superstitious at all?
No. Like, I eat breakfast. I get my hair braided. Like, I'll do, like, some light stuff with James in the morning.
What kind of braid? Like a Princess Elsa braid? I only know this because my daughters asked me to braid their hair, and it's pretty fucking terrible. it's pretty bad. I gave my daughter a really bad – my wife's like, did you mean to give her a side braid? And I'm like, she's like, well, normally the braid's in the back. You have it, like, kind of – I'm like, yeah, it's kind of over her ear a little bit, but that's because she was moving her head. And my wife's like – I'm like, well, they need to stop asking me to braid their hair every day. And then they request different braids, and so I'm just making – joke here.
Getting on the YouTube. Well, you got to get your braid game up.
I know, my fucking braid game.
I can't braid, and I'm a girl, so it's all right.
Yeah, my wife's really good on it, and like girls are like, can I get that like over? I'm like, dude, you're going to get nothing out of me. It's going to look like dog shit. And then the teacher's like, did you braid their hair? I'm like, yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, no, well, like Victor has this girl that they employ, and she who lives out there, and she comes and braids whoever wants their hair braided. So I'll just whatever I kind of feel like on the day. Yeah, like I'll do some light stuff with James, bit of light pads, bit of movement. I listen to a lot of motivational speeches and stuff like that. Ones that kind of like get me, you know, ready. And I'm actually like, I don't like to think too much about it because like there's really not much to worry about. Like we've talked about before, if you put in all the hard work and training, there's nothing to worry about. Like you just go out there and do the best that you can and, you know, come away with the win. Like there's no need to worry about, oh, is she going to take me down because I haven't done any wrestling.
So you're more like a kind of reflect on more so the training necessarily than like the potential issues of competition and the unknowns and shit like that, staying calm and focused.
Or is there anything like when you go out to fight this fight that you are like, hey, you know what, this is something we've worked on. This is something that I want to, you know, use. Like, I don't know. I mean, I always think like, you know, like there has to be something like, hey, I learned this. This worked really well in training. I'm going to use this as kind of my default a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Like, In my mind, like for the fight, I want to work on the stuff that I've been working on in training, and it's good because in training you've got your partners who are also working on the same thing, so it's super hard to tell whether it's working or not because you're all kind of focusing on the same things. But that's what I love about fighting is it's like it's almost like a fresh training partner that's never seen like what you've been learning. So it's really like a live version of executing everything that you've been working on.
Well, that, and it's also nice to be able to go out and beat on somebody new that you're not going to have to see tomorrow.
Yeah.
I always remember like in the NFL, like we had one deal where we played a team at the end of the year and then we had a bye and we played them again. So they had to cancel the game. We had a makeup game and then we had a bye and then we played them. So we played this team like 2 times in 3 weeks. And normally, like, you go out and you do some fucked up shit to people and you don't see them for the rest of the year. So you're like, here, I remember going out and people being like, dude, last thing you want to do is go out and do something and then have that motherfucker come and looking for you 2 weeks later. And I remember, like that little bit of being like, hey, I'm not going to fucking take this last blow on this dude because, I'm, you know, 2 weeks later, he's going to be like, I'm going to get that motherfucker. So, you know, that in itself, it's like, I'm like, well, I'm going to do some fucked up shit. And if it happens, I'm probably not going to see this person again for a long time. So. It's all like, I got to go see him tomorrow and fucking practice or show up and be like, hey, what's happening?
Yeah, this is true. That's a benefit, I guess.
Well, I mean, Megan, thanks for taking the time. I mean, is there anything else you want to chat about? Anything that you want, you know, if people want to get out and follow you, where do they go? You got a webpage, you got social media, what's the deal?
Yeah, I'm just on, you know, I guess the main social medias. So like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Yeah, probably. So. You can find me on them, Megan Anderson or Megan_A_MMA. So pretty simple.
Yeah, we'll link that stuff up in the show post, and I'm sure Tyler will. You're going to be at her fight on the 7th, yeah?
Should be, yeah.
Okay, cool. And then we'll do a little Snapchat takeover.
Yeah.
And oh.
Yeah, we can come in and definitely do some stuff. I think I'll be in town, so it'll be awesome.
Yeah, I'm out of town. Yeah, if you can
where,
get there.
Where are you going to be?
I'm taking vacation that weekend.
You know.
What? 50-week vacation policy.
I have Luke's supposed to send an email with all his vacation dates, and then he just doesn't send it.
No, here's the thing. John forgets how to check email, and by email, I briefly bring it up as he's driving away after, like, John, for the record, on May 7th, I won't be here.
He's like, I have 27 different bachelor parties to go to this year. I'm like,
hey, when you're the center stone of your hometown social network, and you're the key – you've got a lot of weddings to
Luke
stand
is, Luke is the straw that stirs the drink. That's why I like Luke. He's the straw that stirs the drink. So, like, you know, if Luke's not there, it's a flat-ass drink. If it's Luke's there, that's going to be nice and bubbly and crisp, and everybody's going to have a good time.
You know this is true.
I know you're the straw. That's why I refer to you as the straw.
Anyways, I'm sorry that I'm missing it, but I am coming back that Sunday. So are you staying in town after the fight at all, you guys?
I think we fly back Sunday afternoon.
Shit.
I have no idea.
Well, either way, Megan, I'm trying to schedule up a trip so we can get out to your neck of the woods and maybe drop in and train with you guys a couple days before a seminar. So we'll get to see you in person soon enough if I don't see you that weekend.
No, that's awesome. That'd be cool.
Awesome, guys. Well, again, thanks again for jumping on the show, and best of luck. I'm excited to see if I...
No worries. Thanks so much for having me on, guys.
No problem. Thank you.
See you guys.
See you, bud.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Follow Megan and all of her travels, fights, training, weight cutting, and general shenanigans by finding her on Instagram under the name @Megan, MEGAN_MMA. That's Megan _MMA. You can also hit her up on Facebook by searching her name. Megan fights Amanda Bell on May 7th, so send this hardworking power athlete some love by following her online. Until next time, bye!
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.